Welcome to the Strength Talking Shop podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. We talk all things strength, coaching, fitness, nutrition, powerlifting, strongman. If it involves a barbell, we're going to talk about it. We are presented by Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and Gold Standard's best-selling 100% whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold Standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different items such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as their crisp bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. If this is something that you're interested in getting into your facility, reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Down in the show notes, he's got his email. Dave and the team at Optimum Nutrition Athletics are absolutely amazing. They'll get everything that you need. I use their products every single day. I use the Gold Standard 100% whey for my post-workouts, if I need something quick for protein on the go throughout the day. And also, if I need to grab a snack, I'll just grab one of the almonds, some of the cake bites, and then also the crisps. Absolutely love the crisps and the almonds. So make sure you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, and thank you for being our sponsor. What's up, guys? Strength Talking Shop podcast. Recurrent guest, powerful, Sam Brown.
What's going on, man? How are you?
Pretty good. Isn't it kind of crazy to think about? Like, we were talking about it. You know, we did the podcast together. It was really awesome.
When was that? That was July, right?
It was right after like 4th of July. Cause I remember you, messaged me.
And you
You're like, I'm eating hot dogs and drinking beer right now. I want to eat hot dogs and drink beer on the 4th of July. He's like, you want to do next week? I'm like, yeah, dude, let's do it.
Yeah. Fun fact. I was hammered. Just absolutely like blackout hammered. Cause I was like sitting bobbing in a pool. I had like this swimmy thing from my niece.
Yes.
And it was like wrapped around my big thick trunk. And I was just like bobbing in the water. And I was like, oh shit. Give me my phone. Oh, it was bad, man. It was good. I'm glad it worked out though, because I was like, oh, I did feel like a jerk. But at the same time, I was like, I have been drinking in the sun all day.
Yeah, dude. Like when I read that, I go, oh God, he's having too good of a time right now. I know he is for sure.
Cause I think that was like my first time back.
Yeah.
From when I started Elite in March. So that was like my first time back in Rhode Island. I got called an influencer, which made me vomit in my mouth. So that was cool. It's still like that doesn't like obviously it doesn't affect me anymore. Just kidding. It hurts still here. So that was like my core group of buddies back home. They're just like, oh, the influencer's home. I was like, I'm gonna throw up.
What was the worst comment that you maybe read that you're like, okay, seriously, a-hole? Do you have one?
Oh, yeah. So there was like this streak of comments where it was like, it wasn't even mean. I would prefer if it was outwardly mean.
Yeah.
There were some people that were just like, I really just don't like anything about this guy. And I was like, oh, yikes. Like, call me fat. Say I don't lift, like hit something. But it was just like, and they were very calm, like it wasn't in all caps. And it was like, no, I just don't like anything about this guy. And I was like, nothing? There's nothing? Like, even people I don't like, I'm like, well, at least I like how they dress. Like, yeah. there's like something you can pick out. There was like very calm, just like tick, 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 tick. I don't like anything about this guy. I'm like, good. This is good. It's good for my sensitive side. This is awesome.
That's why, like, dude, I can't. If there's something negative that gets said on something like that, dude, I would take offense to that pretty quickly, and it would hurt me pretty quick, and I'd be like, "Damn it, man!"
Yeah. So that's one of those things that how do I say this? When I first started there, I was like, anytime I did a video, I got like no views. Like there was nothing. Like people don't realize that. It's like my first few videos just tanked. Just total ass. And because no one knew anything about me, like I don't blame them. Like if I'm a viewer of a channel for a long time and this random Bill Burr looking dude comes out of nowhere and like starts telling me things, it's like, who are you? Right? Yeah, like, yeah, he's from where? Yeah. Rhode Island? Is that part of New York? Like, yeah. People don't. So I don't blame the internet for like the negativity, but it got to the point where I just kept showing up.
Yep.
And like, people are just like, I can deal with this. Right? Like, it turned into a completely different thing where it was just like, instead of them saying horribly horrific things or nothing at all, which is way worse, I would much rather you rip me up in the comments, because that's called just that we love comments.
Exactly.
We love comments. It helps the algorithm. Let's do it.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's amazing how many people knew things about my mother online. Incredible, incredible things. And it was always one of those things, like even in the beginning, I was just like, woof, like crickets. Like on this channel of 100, and I think at the time we had like 101,000 subs on YouTube.
Wow.
And I'm like, we get a video that has like 1,000 views in 2 days. And I was like, oof, yikes. Good thing this is fun. Good thing I'm enjoying this.
It was cool to see the transition though. Cause I remember when you did those first videos, I remember the first like Q&A that you did, like those YouTube lives that you did where you'd be like,
oh, that was such a bad idea. That was such a bad idea.
But it was cool because to see it, the transition to the end where you're like, people were like, oh, we love you, Sam. I just want to say thank you for everything. And it's like, whoa, like there was this big tide to change.
Yeah. And that, I don't know. I don't know if people thought I was like, genuinely who I am, like, you know me, like on a very personal level.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, this is the same, it's the same thing. Like I don't like being a character, like, because that's the hard thing about lying, is that I'm not smart enough to be good at lying, because I really like, it's hard to remember what I said.
Yes.
So it's like, all I tried, and like the entire time I was there, my focus, and we talked about this before we started recording, was my goal is to just be a conduit. I want to be a conduit for the people, the guests, the athletes, the people coming out. Like, they have the story and they have the information. How can I get joysticked by our viewership to ask the questions they want to know? Mm. Right. So I've never been like, I'm the king of this, or I am so strong. No. And that's even one of the things I said in the video, is like, I want you, the viewer that doesn't like me, get stronger than me, get smarter than me. I want that. Like, we want to build a community of people who are jacked and super smart and awesome. And just, yes, be better than me. That's the goal. But I can tell you right now, you're not going to care more than me, because I kept just putting my junk on the table and just keep showing up, man. And that's really the reason why I even got that position in the first place, is because I just kept showing up. It was to the point where like people on the team were just like, who is this guy? And why is he at every seminar? Because we know he can't afford it. Fun fact, I couldn't at all. That's what credit cards are for. Cha-ching. But it's just one of those things where I was like, I'm just going to keep doing this thing and see what happens. It's just that like level of consistency of just showing up that really like that was it. It's like how rock gets eroded by water over time. Like, it's just, you keep showing up for the internet, and then like one of these days they'll just be like, all right, doesn't suck that bad.
Well, I think a lot of it was because, like you said, you were so genuinely yourself, which was so great, but also too, you brought a different, I could relate to you. Like, even when before we met, we did the podcast together, and then since then we've become good friends, like, I could read your articles, I would see your social media profile, I'm like, I can relate to this guy. Like, I train in a home gym, right? I work in a corporate job. Like, I could get behind that. And I think when somebody can see maybe themselves, they're like, okay, I can get behind this person. Because let's be honest, it's sometimes hard to listen to the guy that squats over 1,000 pounds, but I'm squatting 400 pounds. Like, not the same. We are, but we're not.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand that. And that was one of the reasons why the position was created in the first place, is because they wanted somebody to be able to decipher things for the people that were viewing. Like, right. Like, so the demographic for the YouTube channel was like 2 to 5 years of training, non-competitive.
Yep.
like wants to be jacked and look better naked. Like that's pretty much what we're looking at. So I was like, okay, well, who, what piece of this information is being portrayed is going to help that person? So I, when I was looking at the camera, I was looking at that person.
Yep.
And like, that's, that was just that clear line of communication. I think it was important, right? Because like you said, like I didn't, I, my background is way different than most people's. And like, at the end of the day, there's a certain point where you just need to give a shit and like ask questions and be inquisitive and just throw your hat in the ring. And that's what I really wanted to do. That's how I started even in Multiply, is like, it just started with a conversation with my training partner, Adam. It'd be like, wow, that'd be really funny if you did a meet. And I was like, all right, well, sounds good. Can I look really ridiculous in a pumpkin suit that doesn't fit? I'm in. Sign me up.
Where'd you get that suit from? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
Which one? The orange one?
Yes, the orange pumpkin one.
There were so many suits at Elite. Mm-hmm. So many.
Yeah.
Because obviously they were all metal, right? And there was like that whole debacle with metal saying racially charged things.
Yes.
And so Dave was just left handing, just holding the bag of like, it was like a $250,000 or $500,000 worth of inventory of metal lifting gear. Mm. And he came up to me, he's like, here, put this on. But the problem is like, they just didn't have like the normal people sizes. They had like really big people or really small people, because like everybody would just grab the normal people sizes. So I didn't know until 3 weeks before the meet that my orange suit was designed for somebody that was like 260 and I was sitting at a sultry 215.
Right, exactly. I don't think people understand the gear side of it. I'm like, it's got to fit. If it doesn't fit, it's going to be like super wonky. Like I've put briefs on one time before and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is weird. Like this has got, like, this is totally different than anything I've ever experienced.
Yeah, and you had Brian Carroll on a little while. That was like one of your last episodes, right?
Yep.
He's an absolute wealth of knowledge when it comes to gear. But it's, and again, I have only been doing it for a little less than a year. Mm-hmm. So my pedigree, my background, I've just gotten the expedited version, because the people that I train with.
Exactly.
Kind of did the thing for longer than everybody else. I mean, Adam, my training partner, still has like world records in the, I don't know, with the toddler class. He's like a small guy. I have no idea. he's like the pequeño class. But no, like he's literal world, like holds records. Like he's top 20 in like 165, I think. I forgot what his numbers are, but like the real deal. And it's just this trial by fire where they're like, throw these things on and squat the complete opposite of how you want. I'm like, okay, I'm in. And that's one of the best parts of my time there, was the fact that it was just shut up and learn this thing. I'm like, okay, I'll just put these, called them my hot, my robo pants or my hot pants or my party pants or like whatever I wanted to call them. But it was, I didn't get shit that fit until after my first meet.
Yeah.
Well, nothing fit.
It's admirable that you, and I loved that you did the multi-meet, but it was admirable in the fact that what you said, like, you have to go out, any kind of any discomfortable things, it's gonna make you a lot better as a human being. Like, I'm sure you took a shoot ton of information from doing that multiply meet.
Of course.
That has helped you in so many different ways, where you can help a multi-lifter, a raw lifter, you can help somebody that's just training in their home or at a Lifetime Fitness, whatever it is. Like, but you had to endure that time. And now look, you're still doing it.
Yeah, because I have a problem with my brain. That's the issue.
it's a problem we all have to compete. It's okay.
Yeah, it's just so different than the strongman thing, which has been what I've been doing for years. But you're right, it's provided me with the experience to have better conversations and be able to just talk to more different types of people, which at the end of the day, that's what I came to that company for, is to be able to cross the table and have these conversations on different levels with all different walks of life, whether you compete in bodybuilding. Granted, I will never do that, ever because food's delicious.
Yes.
But like powerlifting at different levels, I understand, like raw, equipped, whatever, strongman, like everything, right? Strength sports in general. But I knew if I was going to be there, I had to do the thing. And you just do the thing, man. Like at the end of the day, you're going to look ridiculous with your pumpkin suit that doesn't fit in front of a lot of people at a meet. But you know what? You have to do it because you just learn from that. You learn from those experiences. You learn from that hardship. And at the end of the day, like, it's kind of fun. I found a thing that's kind of fun. You know,
that's the thing too. You found something you enjoyed that was fun, but also too, like, I think of this from a coaching standpoint, right? I remember when I was coaching, there was a coach where I saw his programming and I saw the way he ran things. I'm like, I don't really necessarily think I would do it that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I did is I went and had a conversation with him. I said, I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do for a whole week straight. I did exactly what he programmed for me as if he was one of his athletes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a ton in that week where I was like, you know what? I was wrong and you were right about X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And we were able to then, like you said, have the conversation. How many times do you wish you could have a conversation with somebody, but you're like too ego chest and you're like, ah, no, I know more than you. Or you maybe or think you're in a room with people. And I always go by the advice, like, obviously you should not be the smartest person in the room, but like, you're like, oh man, there's no way I could like listen or do anything with this guy that he or she does. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh wait, we can have the same conversation at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And that's one of those things that I think even like young coaches or young trainers or anybody that works with people needs to realize is you just have to help that person in front of you. Like you're not going to use, I think it was even a Dave quote that he said to me. It was like, you're going to use 2% or 5% of what you know with like 90% of the people that you work with.
Yeah.
As soon as you realize that we're all trying to do the same thing, like we're all trying to help people. You can help people your way. I can help people my way. At the end of the day, you're trying to help people. And if you let your ego get in the way of learning things, please, like you're not only hurting that your clients, you're hurting yourself, right? Because they could have just one nugget of information that can make you better. And if your ego isn't letting you even just say hi or have a conversation, like you're missing out on so much. And that was one of the coolest things was I may not have agreed with everybody I've had conversations with or sat on a podcast with, like you, right? I'm sure you've talked to many people. You're like, I don't agree with this.
100%, but
if you can't be in a position to be like, why do you do this? And then they explain it. You're like, I can see why you pick that. I don't agree with it, but I can at least see the train of thought, you know?
I remember I've said this story on the podcast 100 times. I don't know if I've told you this, but we were doing Olympic weightlifting at Mid-America and we ran with it with our.
Good for you, by the way. Good for you. My patience level for that would be horrific.
Well, Trevor was the head guy at the time. And he's like, let's experiment, man. He's like, let's see. Cause he had not done Olympic stuff with him, I don't think before that. He's like, we'll do this with our freshmen and our red shirts. We'll give them, I don't know if it was 8 weeks.
Hello. That's a low risk situation there.
Right.
Huge fan of that decision.
Yeah. We're like, we'll do it with we'll do it 8 to 12 weeks, can't remember what it was. And we'll do the progression, progress them up. And then it got to like, I don't know, 80%. And all technique went out the window. And we're like,
sure.
Okay. But you know what I did instead? Instead of being like, it doesn't work, I was like, I'm going to go get my USAW certification and go learn from.
Let's double down on it, right?
Let's double down on it. Went and got my USAW certification, picked up a ton of information from it, was able to meet the person that ran ours, who she was absolutely fantastic. Exactly what you said. Little quirks, little cues, little different things. And guess what? I could totally feel comfortable now coaching it because then I was able to implement it my own way and using those little things. And I could have just said, nope, it didn't work. I'm never going to do it again. And it's like, you know, there's different circumstances. Will I always do Olympic lifting? No. And here's the thing. When I ran things at MNU, we didn't do Olympic weightlifting because I didn't feel like it was necessary for us. But I was able to at least let the ego down and like find something else.
Well, and that's one of those things too, is having the wherewithal to have like the data. Right? Yeah. You were tracking things.
Yeah.
And you knew at that 80% mark, shit hit the fan.
Yep.
So now you take a step back and you go, okay, why? Yep. Okay. In my head, I immediately go, we're probably missing some technical cues that carry over at higher percentages.
Yep.
Or they're unable to stabilize the weight in those at the higher level because they're not starting at a good position, ending it. Like there's something, there's a missing link. And the fact that you went to that certification speaks wonders and speaks of yourself highly because, man, there are a lot of people that you, like you had said, would be, nah, not gonna, that's stupid. That's dumb. The reason I've never really dabbled with Olympic weightlifting is because I've never done it myself. I had one stretch, and shout out to Jordan Genta, Dr. Jordan Genta from Prescript. I went through his weight online weightlifting certification just to learn because I'm like, they're saying words that don't register in my meathead brain. I'm like, what are we doing with the high pull quarter turn kick flip McTwist? I don't know what the hell's going on. But at the end of the day, I saw the clear progression. I saw the requirements to be able to do the lifts, and I could make a better educated decision and be, okay, my 15-year-old baseball players, risk to reward just isn't there for them.
Bingo.
Right?
Bingo.
So, but if someone was like, I want to learn how to do a clean, okay, we can have that conversation. I can get you mildly proficient. But if you want to get anything, like you need to know your limitations. I can do very basic. I am so good at PVC pipe cleans. I'll tell you right now, it's going to be awesome. Right? But as soon as there's weight on the bar, I just muscle F it up all the way. I just pull it straight up from the ground. Like there is no technique with me. But I think just exposing yourself to that information is very important because then it opens up more questions and more directions that you can kind of drill down into.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the more questions you can ask, the better you can get things obviously answered in the long term, and you can find different results. And then two, I've stumbled upon so much crap where I didn't even realize what I was looking at for a long time, where you're like, oh, that and that together makes that. Or you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
right.
So we are doing max effort and repeated okay, got you. Like, I think it's over time as a coach that just takes a while for you to understand, because in the beginning you screw up a lot and it shows, but you figure out, I think, fairly early in your career what's going to work and everything like that. And to kind of piggyback off what you were saying earlier though, you did a really good job at Elite, and you did this before Elite and you still continue to do it, is the technique side of things. You at the seminar, it was amazing when you were talking about technique stuff. And I love when you do your AMAs and people are like, X, Y,
that's and Z. The same
like,
thing.
And it's like technique, man. Like, what does your technique look like? And you and I and Thayer have had that conversation where I was talking about some deadlift stuff, I don't know, it was a couple of months ago. And it's like, you know, maybe technique is just, it's going to drive everything. And like I pulled the other day and I just slightly changed my technique a little bit and it flew up. And I'm like, oh, that's a technique thing. Everything was braced perfectly, found the positioning correctly. And the cool thing that you always talked about too is like, it's not universal.
No. So, yeah, like the end goal is universal. It's like pick up the damn weight.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everybody's, and again, this is going to sound like, oh, everybody's a snowflake or whatever, but like there are common goals that you want to accomplish with a lift. It's like, okay, don't die, don't jack yourself up and make it, right? That's pretty much what we want to do. I think this comes from my strongman background where they're like, I don't care what it looks like, get it overhead,
right?
So I can see there are times when people are just not taking the time necessary to lock in, right? Stabilize, get into a good position, get a good starting position. You know, they don't understand what the goal of the lift is and how you get from point A to point B.
Yep.
Right. And it's one of those things that drives me nuts, because this is where the art of coaching comes in. is we need to have a conversation with a lifter. And I'm just like, I've spent a lot of time with power lifters over the last year. You need to have a conversation with them and say, hey, what are you even thinking about during this lift? Oh, I'm thinking about ripping it off the floor. I'm like, okay, well, your perception is that you need to just put as much force in the bar as you can. What are your feet doing? Oh, I don't know. What are you, are you bracing? Do you understand your positioning? Do you understand where your hips are? And then you just make it, and people, a lot of people say like, oh, you're overcomplicating it. It's like, no, like the basics of things are fairly complicated. Yes. Like just because you don't understand it or you're not giving it the time it needs doesn't make me the one overcomplicating it, right? Like so many times I've seen lifters, even at the train your ass off stuff, it's like 800 pound squatters who I teach them how to brace because they've never been taught it.
Wow.
And I'm like, how have you gotten this far? They're like, I don't know. I'll just pick it up. Like, cool. Cool. We're going to adjust a little. We're going to pivot.
Yeah.
Right. You're doing like, we want to keep that energy. Just keep it. But the stronger you are, I'm a firm believer that the more intellectual you have to be with your execution and understanding that the human body only has, what was it, Ed Cohen that said that? The human body only has like so many like real PRs in it before like something kind of blows up.
I've never heard that before. That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Ed Cohen. We can double check on that. But it's like, if you understand that, if you realize you only have so many PRs in your life, right? You really have to take the time and focus in on making sure those PRs count in a position where they should count, like at a meet.
Exactly.
And you're not putting yourself in a position where you are reducing the amount of PRs that you possibly could by shortchanging the process, right? That's one of those things that drives me insane is they're like, they're so worried about weight on the bar. And they're like, I just need this PR. I need this PR. I didn't get this for this many reps or this many, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but did you get better? Like, did you get better with your execution? Did you get better with your setup? Did you get better with your positioning? Did you get better with the mental conversations that you have during that training session? Did you get better? One of the best clients I've ever worked with was a 60-year-old woman in general, like a total general population. She was looking to lose weight. She was afraid of the gym. She was afraid to walk in the door because she thought the gym was a place where you get ridiculed and you get made fun of if you're not in shape and you do all this stuff. So I took her in. The first conversation I had with her, and this is like, anybody listening to this that coaches people, this is coaching 101.
Yep.
First off, have a conversation with them. Make them feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Make them see the gym or that place as like a happy place, right? Like, don't scare them away. But the point of even bringing this story up is I did the same two training sessions with her for 6 months.
Wow.
We just modified her thought process. We modified the speed, the rest, the this, the that. But I did the same exercises. It was the same machines. It was the same movements. And because that allowed her to know what to expect. She knows this is the part of the workout that gets harder than the other parts. Mm. This is the part that she likes more than the other parts. This is the part that means that she's almost done, but she knows she has to do this after this,
right?
So it took that fear of the unknown completely out of the situation. So now 6 months later, down like 45 pounds, walking into the gym like an absolute animal, being excited, she didn't know she was progressing on everything. I told her day one, I was like, don't you worry about the weights on the bar. Just we're looking at make you feel this and enjoy it, right? And those positive attributes that we kind of helped build in the gym carried over outside to the habits that she had that really helped her to lose weight. My training sessions didn't help her lose weight.
Exactly. It helped her
build that confidence to make better decisions outside the gym. And that just comes from, again, it's so many layers to this, the training experience, right? People get so focused in on just the reps and the sets, but it's like, you're dealing with a human. You're dealing with a human with a story. You're dealing with a human that has fears, that has likes, that has dislikes, that has a story, that has all of these things. And if you're not taking those into consideration, you're being a bad coach.
Yep.
That's just at the end of the day, you're being a bad coach. And if you don't care to have these conversations, maybe you shouldn't be coaching.
100%, man. Because 99.9% of the people that I've ever trained, okay, I shouldn't say that, 99% were just doing it because they had to. And I have friends and family members that they're like, oh, you still lifting weights? It's like, yeah, because I love lifting weights. They don't love lifting weights.
No.
So you have to, if they don't love it, I'm not saying you're going to make them love it, but you have to give them the, at least the confidence to come in and keep showing up. Keep showing up. Because what's the worst thing that happens when you're training somebody, especially a gen pop person? They come in for like two or three sessions, and then they miss a week, and then they come in for, you know, it's often, and then they just don't re-sign up. Then you're out the money, and then you're like, crap, I didn't get to help somebody. Oh,
right.
Because like you said, you gave her confidence to continue to show up. That's your job as a coach and a trainer. Get them to show up, and then you progress them, give them the confidence. You know, I think about that with like high school kids. Walking around the hallway like a peacock, like, hey, look at me, you know, girls and guys, you know?
Yeah. And it's, and I think that that's a kind of a good segue into that athletic sort of background. Like, athletes are the same way. Athletes are head cases.
Oh God.
They are more in their own heads than anybody else. And if you can instill that level of confidence in the gym, in that training facility, you're going to have a carryover on the field. Because granted, no matter what you believe in terms of conjugate or this or triphasic, any sort of training style that you instill with your athletes or you kind of put with your athletes, there are going to be landmarks and markers that show progress. You need to showcase to them what that progress is and tell them how awesome it is that they reach that point.
Exactly.
Like there are coaches that are like, oh, just like beat them up, blah, blah, blah. And that's cool. Like you can be your tough guy, like whatever. You know, what's really tough being a friggin', sorry, I'm just getting so fired up. Being an athlete and like in school, in whatever, and not knowing if you're going to play, not knowing what's going on in your life. Like there's so many like high school athletes in general, they got so much shit going on. They got so much stuff going on. It's insane. I worked as a counselor in a middle school and a high school.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like this is where this comes from is like, ask them what they had for breakfast. Like, don't just jump down their throat. They're probably having a crappy day because I don't know. I've had kids that I've worked with who are like, yeah, my dad tried to set my mom on fire in the house. Like real story. Like things happen that you need to kind of focus on sometimes. It's like, oh yeah, like maybe their 40 time went down or their 40 time went up the wrong direction because they're having a bad day. Like I don't know. I think that's one of the things that a lot of coaches don't focus on is just that human element to it. And again, there are people that take it too far and blah, blah, blah. But I think at the end of the day is you're here to help people. You're here to coach them. You're here to help them grow with whatever goal they have. If they're an athlete, help them get better. But also like build that confidence. That's such a big thing. High school athletes, build their confidence. Mm-hmm. You want them to be better humans. We have such an amazing opportunity to instill such lifelong positive changes on youth athletes, on clients that we work with. Like how many times have you seen athletes more than their parents?
Yes.
And coaches, like you see them, you saw them more than anybody.
Yeah. I used to tell my football guys, I would tell them, I said, my job is to make you be a complete savage and have as much fun as you possibly can on Saturday. And in the meantime, secondary, I want to build you to be, you know, men that are going to help others once you leave this place, right? And that resonated super, like because I was up front and told them that all the time, they knew what to expect when it came into the weight room session. Mm-hmm. They knew that they were going to get loved. They were going to get, I praised my guys and girls, any sport I've ever coached. I praised mm-hmm. them when they did stuff good. When they didn't, when they did things bad, I let them know, but like, hey, that's not the expectation here.
Right. It's they, it's have those clear standards.
Yes. We have an expectation. We have a standard. You guys aren't meeting it today. Like, I would just kindly bring everybody up together. Hey, why are we like, why are there not been collars on the bars? We know mm-hmm. that's the standard. That's easy. That's simple stuff, guys. And yeah. But then it's funny, after week two, that doesn't show up. Week three, something doesn't show up. Week four, oh, we start getting in a groove. Confidence is going. It's like a well-oiled machine. Now things come up every once in a while, but then at the end, they go, coach, I just put on like 15 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever it was, and I feel great and all this stuff. You're like, good, exactly. You also were doing 300 pounds. Now you're doing 305 on this lift and et cetera like that. Like mm-hmm. they have confidence going into the game day. And this is where I think of it, like you and I, we both compete. You've done strongman and powerlifting. I do powerlifting. Mm-hmm. If you don't have confidence going into the meet, and this is why I think it's important for coaches to compete in something. It doesn't matter.
Oh, why. I agree. 100%.
If you don't have that confidence going into meet day, which we all have a little bit of doubt always, but it's like, mm-hmm. I've never not been confident going into meet.
Yeah.
But
no,
I've had,
I agree.
And I've had sessions where I'm not confident and it shows. Confidence is huge, man.
Huge. Yeah. And that's one of those things where I think people respond to that sort of idea, that whole confidence thing, very differently. You see people that have that bravado and they're like pounding their face against the bar and whatever.
That's not confidence.
No, it's like, who are you trying to convince? Because exactly. I don't know. Like, there are some people it works for. I get it. But it's also exhausting, right? So one of the best ways to be confident is to put the time and the work in and know that your first and second attempt is in the bag. Like, your third attempt is the one where you're like, all right, YOLO, here we go. Let's figure this out. Right? But like, I have a couple lifters that are competing here in just like a month or two. And I always told them, I go, listen, your first attempt should be something you can do for three, not fired up, in silence, right? You know what that does? After that first attempt, they're like, let's go. Let's do this. Like, they're just 100%. Fired up. It's like, we're in the meet. Here we go, right? But no, to your point about having that confidence, I do believe it comes from the doing the work.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can go up to that bar. I explain this to lifters all the time, and you can tell the lifters that played a sport versus the lifters that are just lifting.
Right.
Like, we had somebody that came out to the train your ass off, and he played baseball his whole life. I was like, all right, cool. I was like, when you went up to the plate, what did you do? I was like, tell me your setup. And he told me, he was like, kick the front foot, dig the back foot in, tap the front left, front right of the plate, tighten up the glove, blah, blah, blah. Like, and he told me every step. I was like, all right, what's your setup for your squat? I don't know, grab the bar and put it on my back. I'm like, why are you not taking the same level of diligence to your squat as you did when you were playing baseball?
Right.
Right. Like, it's the same thing. It's like, everything has to be the same. And you could just see this switch. He was like, ah, shit. You're right. From that point forward, it was the same setup every single time. People think that powerlifting programming is so incredibly complicated.
Oh my God. It's so easy.
It's so easy because the lifts don't change. Your execution shouldn't change. Right. It's just, and that's the biggest thing with powerlifting, is like, it's such a technique driven thing that people do not take the time to nail their technique down.
What are your
thoughts? That's why I keep saying it.
Sorry to interrupt, but I want to.
No, you're good.
I want to get your opinion on this. What are your thoughts on powerlifting?
Mm-hmm.
This is my opinion. I love conjugate to death.
Mm-hmm.
Done conjugate my whole life.
Sure.
But sometimes I don't think conjugate might be the best sometimes for certain people, obviously, in powerlifting, because they need exactly what you said, time under the bar doing the three big lifts. Instead of worrying about your Duffalo bar squat, mm-hmm. what does your straight bar squat look like? What does the technique look like? Have you hammered that in? Mm-hmm. Sorry.
You know what? No, you're good, because I've had this conversation with the old West Side guys, even in Dave at the gym, and we've all agreed. Because when I came into the gym, into Elite, mm-hmm. my programming back, I used conjugate, but like I wasn't like a super crazy conjugate guy.
Right.
And we had a conversation. I was like, you know, like peaking with conjugate isn't the best move, right? You can peak with conjugate, but conjugate makes you very good at just being pretty strong.
Yeah.
But it's not specific enough to carry over to a meet. That's why you see even the old West Side guys, the variations wouldn't get far off from what they needed to do.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, the last 4 weeks, it's like, all right, your last heavy squat or your last heavy pulls 3 weeks out, your last heavy squats 2 weeks out, and your last bench is 1 week out. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you're specifically building those up over the course of time, right? With mm-hmm. those moves, with the actual competition lifts. Yeah. Right. So I completely agree. I think beginners can use it. Like if they are under the guidance of somebody, I made a commercial gym conjugate plan that I think could help people.
It's awesome.
Right. Because it just takes the same lift. It's just the same lift. It's every 3 weeks it changes. So it's like a 5, a 3, and a 1. So it feels very conjugate, but it's really kind of not. Right? It's like hiding the pill in the peanut butter for the dog. It's like, cool. Here are the rules. You can do a conjugate. Here's a conjugate program for you. Here's your max effort day. Work up to a heavy 5. I want like between 3 to 5 sets of like working weight to get there. Cool. Week 2, working up to a heavy 3. I want another like, I don't know, 3 to 5 sets working up to that heavy 3. Cool. Last week, single. Yeah, I want about like 6 or 8 sets leading up to that thing. It's like, oh, cool. You just did volume. Yep. Like you just got more practice in. Yeah. Like, that was it. And it, you can call it whatever you want. But at the end of the day, like if you want to get stronger, you got to practice. Strength is a skill, especially in powerlifting.
What are some things, because I love your strongman stuff. I love strongman training. What are some things that maybe powerlifters could steal from strongman training? You gave me a great idea as far as Christ, why can't I think about it right now? Like on my off day, like on my off days, GPP.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Just taking sandbags and just walking with sandbags.
Oh yeah.
Right. And I've seen huge difference in just my work capacity from doing mm-hmm. on my off days, just 20 minutes using the sandbags. But what are some things that you think powerlifters could sprinkle in using some strongman stuff?
So one of the biggest things about strongman that I think people that haven't competed don't understand is that you can have a strongman show you're signed up for, and then day of the meet, an event changes.
Oh God.
Or the implement's totally different.
Really?
So it's like, oh, 100%. At this last meet, my last two stones were supposed to be 305 and 340. But they ended up not changing them. So we were using the lightweight stones. So my last stone was 305. So then it turned into a drag race. So with that in mind, that's why they call it strongman. That is something where the specificity actually takes more of a back seat, right? Because you need to just be strong. You need to be conditioned year round mm-hmm. because shows are random. Obviously they'll have the same ones in the same locations. The events change all the time.
Right.
Right. If you're like, all right, I'm just going to do the same 5 events all year and hope to fit into a show. No, absolutely not. So how powerlifters can kind of take that information is like the base of your program should be to just get stronger in any regard, like build the base. Alex Bromley of Empire Barbell is an absolute dud when just even he has so many videos talking about this, and he like he just, I was watching one of his videos the other day talking about his base, what is it? His base book that he has, like base strength or whatever, and how in depth he goes into that. But it's so simple. It's like the most of your year should be like getting stronger, right? Yeah. Living at that like 75 to 85, get real good there and then peak for a show, right? But what you were saying about like the GPP stuff is people, a lot of the times in powerlifting, attribute peaking to building strength, right? So people don't realize is like the day of the meet, if your program, if you trained accordingly, should be your strongest day.
Yep.
And then right after that, you know what happens? You take a shit and then all of a sudden everything goes away. They don't realize that that's a super compensation. Like they're not walking around every day at that level. And likewise, after the meet, you know, the worst thing you can possibly do is, and where the majority of injuries in powerlifting happen, where they don't hit a number at the meet and then try in the next week in the gym, try to hit something heavy.
I cannot believe people do that. That's so stupid.
Right? It's like you're going to blow something off your body. Guaranteed. Because of the fact that like you don't understand the systems at play.
Right.
You don't understand what the end goal should be.
Right.
And you don't understand that your body takes time to respond to the stimulus that you're giving it. If you were living 90% plus all the time, this is where a lot of the conjugate stuff and like the West Side stuff comes in. It's like, okay, well, if you're constantly hitting max singles, which wasn't even what was going on at the time anyway, right? Like you're going to get burnt out. You're going to get fried. That's just how that works. So you need to have those phases of training, right? Right after a meet, you know what you need to do? Take that bar off of your back and out of your hands and start getting your general physical preparedness back up. You need to be able to tie your shoes without being out of breath. If you're peaked for a powerlifting meet, man, you are sweating all the time. Like walking upstairs is terrible. Everything kind of hurts, but you're so primed to do 9 lifts.
Yeah.
Right. After that, you need time away. So that's where the sandbag comes in. That's where the sled drags come in. That's where the high volume reps work, right? Like sets of 20 on goblet squats, just things you haven't done. The best advice I've ever been given was when I was working with baseball players is like, and I think it was Cressy was talking about this, is how they're rotating the same way over and over and over and over. And it's like, you're just you know how you can grab a paper towel and twist it?
Yeah.
And when you take that tension off, it kind of spirals back the other way, just slowly.
Yeah.
They're twisted the same way over and over. Powerlifters are compacted the same way over and over and over and over and over and over and over, right? You make a powerlifter try to rotate, see ya. It happened to me last year when Corey Schlesinger came out. I was doing all sorts of rotational stuff for his videos. I was in the middle of powerlifting prep. I thought I broke a rib. I strained an oblique and I was so jacked up for like 2 weeks because of just a little rotation.
Yeah.
You adapt to the demands that you put your body under. Give yourself the foundation. The wider the base, the taller the pyramid, right? Yeah. Right after a meet, you got to be able to breathe better. You got to be able to move better. You got to have those injuries heal. You got to get work on stuff you're bad at. The farthest out from the meet is right after the meet. Work on stuff you're bad at. Work on conditioning. Get your resting heart rate down, you fat bastard. Right? Like there's so many things that you can do that will help you facilitate the expression of strength later on. And strongman is a great way to do that. Grab a sandbag, grab some farmers, drag a sled, like do things that will get you into better shape.
Yeah.
Just walk. It's amazing. Yeah. Weighted vests, do all sorts of stuff like that. I don't know.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's where I think I found a lot of success in just my own training is just implementing that shit. It just makes you just feel better. Like you said, you're not out of breath. Like my last meet last year, I had done so much weighted vest walks, and I even bought an elliptical and was on that. Mm-hmm. And our meet was literally handing out medals by noon, and the meet started at 9.
Oh, yeah, you're motoring.
That was a sprint, dude. And there were guys and girls, because it was not very many of us, unfortunately. It was like 20 of us, maybe. They were
hack it.
Winded at the end of that thing. And I'm proud of myself. I was standing strong, and I'm like, I feel good. I feel like I left a little in the tank, but it's like I attribute a lot of that to the sandbag training, the elliptical training, like getting out and moving my fat ass and doing things. Do you have a favorite episode that you did with Elite
for podcasting? The podcast?
Yeah,
man.
I'll tell you mine whenever you're done.
Yeah. So for me, I kind of put them in different categories, right? I mean, the biggest, I mean, I was such a Wendler fan for forever. That 100th episode was super cool.
It was awesome.
But I have to say one of the ones that I enjoyed the most was when Chad Ikes came out and started talking about like mental health and all that stuff. And I was like, yo, I was like, this is like real. He's talking about suicide. He was talking about like all this stuff. And I was like, this is such an important conversation. Corey Schlesinger came out, man. Like that was such a great one. Like he's such a smart dude. Like Juju coming out, Joey coming out. That was just like a fun one. It's like a different vibe. Like they're all different vibes, but I have to say one of my favorite episodes that we did was probably Justin Harris and Danny LaMartina. Was that the one you were going to say?
That was the one. That's the one you're going to say.
Shit. So good. So good. Those two people, they are incredible human beings. Yep. Danny is, I would put her at the top of my list in terms of one of the best, if not the best physical therapist I've ever met and spoken to. When I, not only that, she bakes cookies like crazy. She's like an awesome baker. She baked us cookies to say thank you after that. It was such an absolute pleasure to work with them. But even better were the conversations that never made it.
Right.
In between videos, I was like, just keep rolling cameras. Like this stuff is so good because they are so smart and they love what they do and they love helping people. I could have talked to them for hours, hours and hours and hours because they were just so genuine and they love that shit. They loved it.
Yeah. That's maybe my favorite episode ever because of just the wealth of knowledge. And two, like hearing Danny in a long form like that
was so good.
And then, you know, she's a client of Justin's. So the back and forth between coach and client, and then the way Justin breaks down things is just when he broke down like the muscle per year, like you would be like X amount of, you know, protein, all that stuff. I was like, oh my God, it's so true. It's just so interesting to hear everybody's story, like you said, on the podcast. But I didn't know. I just wondered if like any one of them, like particularly, like, and it's so funny that that was the same one that we both had.
Well, it's very interesting because I look back and like I blinked and a year went by.
Yes.
And when I got there, I think the first episode I did was just me and Dave. And I think it was episode like 54. And I was like, whoa. This is like that. I was like 54 episodes. That's incredible. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But I looked back and it was 54 episodes from like 2018.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like that's a lot of episodes. And then I blinked, a year went by. I remember being at the Arnold and we had I think it was a week or two before the Arnold, we did the 100th episode.
Wow.
And then we did like two or three more after that. And it got to like 104 or 105. And I think it was an episode that I did. And I was like, I was a part of 50 episodes.
Yeah.
I think at the end, I think I was, my last one I did or was a part of was like 107. It was the Stu McGill episode, which again, like what? Like
awesome.
Why? Like unbelievable. I was like, I even listened back to it. I'm like, I'm a fumbling idiot. This guy is so smart. And like, there are so many times he did such a good job letting me down easy. He was like, Sam, that's a lot of information that you asked of me. And I'm like, I know, it's because I'm wildly excited and I can't shut the F up. So it's just so, but it was such a great experience because I got to tell him my story of how I got involved with the BackFit Pro and then McGill Method and whatnot. And he was so cool about it. Like, it was a chance for me to, and I selfishly did it for me because I wanted to tell him how much it meant to be able to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And to be in that room surrounded by doctors. And I'm like, yo, I am going to crap my pants. And like, I remember my name tag, I was looking at everybody else's name tag. I'm like, I don't even know what those letters mean. I'm like, how come there's so many letters under yours? How come yours has ribbons? Mine just says strength coach. And I was like, looking around. I was looking for the other schmuck in the room that has just like the quiet name tag. I'm like, oh boy. But like, that was one of the most pivotal positions of my life. I remember going up there with a meniscus tear. I couldn't even do any of the things. I was hobbling on the floor.
Wow.
I had no idea. But I was like, I'm not going to miss this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to miss it. And then I met Brian Carroll there. I was wearing my Elite FTS sweatshirt. And he was like, hey, like the last day was all about performance training. He was like, hey, can you teach the sumo deadlifts? And I was like, I've never done it in my life, but I will teach the shit out of it. But I think I had sumoed probably like, honestly, like four times, literally like four reps in my life.
I can't remember if he told me that on the podcast or off air. He told me that same story. And I just could not stop laughing. Cause I'm like, I can't imagine Sam's face being like, oh yeah, I'll do it. Okay.
Like I was just like, I want to teach these dorks in this room how to lift. This will be sick. And I was like working with them and McGill. So McGill got, stopped by Border Patrol and couldn't make it into that. And
shit. I did.
So he was like this bit, it was even better because it was like the effing Wizard of Oz. It was like this big face on the wall and he zoomed in and he was watching. And I remember looking over my right and seeing McGill just staring and seeing, he could see everything.
Yeah.
And it was, I have these pictures on my Facebook and I'm like coaching in front of this room of doctors and it's Brian Carroll and this dude sumo deadlifting who had never sumoed in his life. And they're like, all right, how do you teach somebody how to sumo deadlift that has come back from a back injury? And I'm like,
wow.
And it was the first time where I was like, I don't know how this is gonna go. I have zero idea, but here we go. And that's how I did it. And it even happened at Elite all the time. Like if you were to talk to Jacob or any of the other media people, I would always be like, what just happened?
Yeah.
I just blacked out. Like what happened to me,
man? It's wild that you say that story and you talk about that, because if you've noticed, there's like a theme, man. Like, you will put yourself in these situations like, I'm gonna go to this seminar, I'm gonna go to this conference, I'm gonna go to this gym, I'm gonna go talk to this person, I'm gonna get this certification. It's like, I'm just gonna do the thing. And you've said it multiple times on the episode, like, you got to do the work. Like, I saw a graphic today that was true. It was like, it was a pie and it had hard work. Like, some people think, oh, if I work hard, I'll achieve everything I want. It's like, well, you have to work hard. You also have to know some people. You also have to put a little bit of time and effort in gaining relationships with this and that. It's like, you've done that, man. Like, that's a theme.
Well, I appreciate that. But it really comes from the position of, man, I could be so much better. Like, it's like this crippling self-doubt where it's just like, huh, I'm not good at this.
Dude, I feel the I'm exact tired same of
being
way.
So bad at this, you know?
It's tough, man. But, you know, to pivot off that, like, you know, we did the seminar in Kansas City and it was awesome. What was that like? For me, it was very surreal. I can tell you that much. It was, very enjoyable.
It was very cool to see. And it was one of those things where if this is going to sound terrible, but I have to say it. It feels real good to be the underdog where it's like, oh, I'm going to show these dudes. Like, I'm going to show these guys that, like, this was the best investment they could have done. Like, this, we're gonna blow this seminar off the hinges. We're gonna give it's gonna be like a rock show.
Yeah,
they're gonna be like, encore, encore. more stability talk, more exercise. Like, it just gets so excited. But like, it really comes from that point of like, I don't want to disappoint people. I want to give people the best possible version of myself that I can.
Yeah.
And it's honestly for me has come to a detriment sometimes, because like, I'll just lay in my bed and be like, I don't have anything else to give. Right. Like, yeah. Especially after like that seminar, not like that one didn't drain me as much, because it was a tag team effort. It was like a triple threat match.
Right.
You Thayer rocking it. It's like, we could tag right. each other in, you go, I go, I'm going to go sit in the bathroom and quiet just for a few minutes and just kind of decompress
yeah.
and like breathe. And then I'll tag you in, and then I'm going to crush a monster, and then we're going to do it again. But it really comes from that place of like, you just care about people. You know what it feels like to be on the receiving end of information, and you want to make sure that you're providing them with a service, yep. information that they can take and use. And that's why we called it the Sensible Sports Performance Seminar, right? Because
exactly.
like, we need to make sense of all, like a lot of this complicated jargon that you hear in the industry, but it's like, yo, just try it out. And that's why we wanted it, that second half, to be so much of that practical application. Like, just get out of your own way. Just get out of it. No one's going to look dumber than me. I promise.
That was the best part, was getting to see you in action, get to see Thayer in action, talking. And then we all broke up in the groups and we worked on all of our different stuff. But listening to the conversations with the group before we would break and we would switch up and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. I can remember those talks where it's like, well, what if we tried this and we tried that? And I'm like, let's try it out. Let's look and
let's
see.
Do it right now.
And so as a group, we figured it out. And like, one person was like, well, hey, like, you know, I've been having a client that deals this, this, and that. Like, what would you do? And I'm like, well, I would maybe do this, but let's try it out right now. And mm-hmm. then I got to see you do that. I got to see Thayer do that. And honestly, I learned just as much as probably as our attendees did, because exactly that, like learning from you two, but then the conversations and learning from these other coaches and trainers that were there. It was amazing. And then also too, it also was amazing that John, shout out to him, the owner of Kansas City Strength Conditioning, bringing Starbucks for us. That was pretty amazing.
That's good.
I will say this though, that day ruined me, because we shotgun monsters in the morning, and I had not had an energy drink in like 5 years, maybe. I've gone off the rails. since then, I'm back on the wagon, baby.
The enablers.
But it it was so much fun.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I think that people can tell that you care. People can tell that you do have their best interest in mind. It's like, we know what it's like to be on the receiving end of that. Like I said, like, we know what it's like to sit at that table or sit at that chair with our notebooks and like writing things down. You're like, I'll remember this. And then come Monday morning, you're like, I don't remember a damn thing. Nope. And I'm out $250 or whatever it is. Yeah. I didn't even charge that much. But I think it's just one of those things where I get excited because I want people to see like, hey, we did it. Like, we did the thing. Like, let's keep, like, you can do the thing too. That's the coolest part about this job.
Exactly.
About this profession. Is like, you can do this stuff too.
That's the coolest thing too, is like, you know, we all connected afterwards with all of the people, mm-hmm. and I've followed their journeys. I've talked to a few of them since, and to see them in action and see the growth, it's so freaking cool. Cause you're like,
I was
a small little baby piece of that, but they're getting better each and every day as a coach and a trainer, a gym owner, whatever it was. Like, that is so awesome to see. Cause it's like, yeah, we were, like, and we're still those people. Like, we're always wanting to learn. You and I, we're always wanting to learn. But it's like, all right, you know, like, we helped somebody, another coach that's going to go out and help another person that could maybe mm-hmm. potentially help another person. And that's what it's all about.
Those hubs of influence, right? Yeah. We can work with a client, or we can work with a coach that helps 10, 1500, 200 clients, right? So it's just one of those things that I think I don't ever take for granted. Whenever I get a call to do anything, if someone's like, if I talk with you and you're like, oh, we're going to do this seminar and wherever, it's like, yo, I get so excited.
Oh, man.
Like, I always get excited. Like, the first one I did this last year was with Joey Zat over at the Lion's Den. And I was on a high. It was a 2-day seminar. It was my first ever 2-day seminar. I let these people have it. I was like, you're getting both barrels both days. And I'm going to give you every ounce of me over the course of these 2 days. And it was so cool. I still talk to some of those people that were there. And it's education is so important because it's a two-way street. It's like the old medical adage of, what is it? See one, do one, teach one, right? Like that's how you learn things, right? You spend so much time in it doing the thing. You need to take a step back and like show somebody and teach somebody and explain what's going on. And it makes you better. Yep. It's the most, and like you had said, I've learned so much from being a part of presenting, more so than I would learn from just going to the seminar, because I really have skin in the game. I got to know my shit. I got to know the other presenters' stuff as well. Like the seminar I just did with Cal and Joe over at Friends and Nate. I reread Conjugate U. I reread Triphasic because I was like, there was not going to be a point where I cannot connect the thing I'm talking about to what they're doing.
Exactly.
I refuse to be an island in that situation. And even the videos that I have, I'll actually end up putting them on my YouTube channel there. Of the presentations that I did, I'm always trying to connect the dots with the other people and give homage to those people and what they do. And it's like, this is how you would connect this with triphasic. Even though Cal threw me out to dry with some bracing conversation that happened in front of everybody. So that was super cool. They were like, talk about bracing. Sam believes in bracing. Cal doesn't. I'm like, this is good. This is really fun. Fun story about Cal though. The first time I met him, right at he walked into the where the seminar was going to be. He's got his boots on, his jeans. He's huge. He's a big dude. Cal's a big dude. And he walks up to me. He says, oh, hey, how are you? Whatever. One of the powerlifters comes by, walks by me and Cal and Joe and goes, hey, you Sam Brown from Elite? I was like, yeah. They're like, you got hit in the nuts with a band. I go, yep, that was me. And Cal looks at me and he goes, I saw that video. It's like, oh, good. I was like, this is why I'm here. This is it. I took the mini band to the sack.
Oh man, that's great. We'll wind down here, man. What can we expect next from Sam Brown?
Yeah, man. Me and you, we're going to be working together with Thayer and even more people to try to get more of those seminar experiences out.
Hell yeah.
I'm trying to pad my roster of remote clients for powerlifting or whatever you want to do. Practicemovement.com is my personal website. Again, I'm going to try to just continue on what I was doing at Elite, just in my own way. I'm going to have more conversations with people. I'm going to share more information. I know my role in this grand scheme of the world, and it's to just continue being the conduit for awesome people. It's like, I just want to share awesome people with the world, right? Like I could go on and on about Danny or Justin or Juju or whoever. It's like, I want to, granted they have a larger platform or whatever, but there are people that don't know who they are. And I think of it as my job to help facilitate the growth and education of coaches for the future young coaches. Like I want to help me when I was just starting out. I want to be the person that my younger self would be like, that's a cool dude because he's doing the right thing. So just more education, more information, trying to, you know, just be a better coach every single day, try to help more people. And that's all I got, man. Maybe drink a few beers along the way.
I drink a couple of these because I'm a loser. Get ready for a meet. I got to make a weight class. These athletic, non-alcoholic beers. They're very good, actually.
Oh, get the hell out. That's so weird.
0.5 alcohol.
I'm drinking the same thing. It's a Mick Ultra. That's really cool. It's like the same thing.
we'll get out of here with the last thing. What are you grateful for?
Man, I am grateful for every single experience that led me to this moment in time. Grateful for you, grateful for this situation, grateful for the time that we will be spending together in the future, helping, learning, experiencing things. Man, everything happens for a reason. I am beyond grateful for the opportunities I've had. I'm beyond grateful for the opportunities that I will come at some point in time. So no, thank you for everything you do. You, what you do is massively important in the strength and conditioning and training world, providing amazing content, amazing information, awesome coaches. We do the same thing, and I'm so glad that you're on my team. So grateful for that.
I'm grateful to be a part of your team, brother. I'm glad that we're in the positions that we're in, man. I'm very thankful. All right, guys, follow this beautiful, beautiful Bill Burr looking man, and go learn some information from him, and make sure you leave lots of mean comments.
There you go. Just make me feel at home.
Oh shit! Hold on, I had to end it. So I had a Winston Churchill quote for you. You will never reach your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks. So all you haters on Sam, he's not even listening to you barking.
No, the coolest thing is I'm on a wagon now and I'm throwing rocks at you sons of bitches.
Stay strong.